Well, welcome, everyone. It is February 17th, and so far it looks like we have about 8 or 9 people on the call, with more joining us as we go along. My name's Molly Kellogg, and I'll remind you all that this is an informal gathering. It's not a structured seminar or webinar. The overall topic is the counseling process in the nutrition care setting, and it's an opportunity for people to join every few months and share resources and fun things that they're discovering about the counseling process, and to ask questions as well and concerns. I'll briefly introduce myself, even though I'm sure all of you basically know who I am. I'm a registered dietitian and have been for, I lose track, since 1980, whenever that was. And I am also a licensed clinical social worker. So in my practice, I am a psychotherapist, and I also am a dietitian. When I see nutrition clients, I just work with eating disorders. I no longer do the full range of nutrition counseling. And let's see, what else do I need to... Oh, I did want to tell you guys about some upcoming trainings, my two-day motivational interviewing training that some of you probably on this call have already been to. I'm going to be in San Jose in a few weeks, but that one's already filled up. The one in St. Louis is May 5th and 6th. Seattle, I'll be there June 9th and 10th. Washington, D.C., July 28th and 29th, the Boston area, actually Lowell, Mass., September 15th and 16th, and it looks like I may be coming to Charlotte, North Carolina. This isn't firmed up, but that'll probably be the first weekend of October, and then I will be doing one in Philadelphia, December 8th and 9th. That one is not on my website yet, but will be soon. I am also very excited about a brand new training that I'm going to be offering with two colleagues. For the first time, we'll be offering it in April 22nd in the Boston area. It's going to be called Internal Family Systems for Dietitians, Expanding the Toolkit of Behavioral Change. It is designed for eating disorder dietitians as an introduction to IFS, or Internal Family Systems, and I won't go into any more detail here.
I'm going to free copy.
You could look at my somebody who just signed on seems to be having some background noise or doesn't realize they aren't muted. I'm not hearing something. Okay, so that's it, I think, for the ads I wanted to include here. There, it looks like we've got at least, I've lost track, 25 or so people on the call at this point. And again, I'll remind you that this is, the content of this is not set ahead of time, and it's not a CEU conference call. It's just a time to gather together and share things about motivational interviewing in a nutrition setting, or generally the counseling process. I'll remind you that if you expect to have any noise in the background or need to say something to someone in the room, be sure to mute your phone. If you're not able to do that actually on your phone, the system will allow you to do it. You can do 4-star. And then if you want to be heard again to ask a question or make a comment, you do 4-star again. And there may here and there, but there are enough people on the call that I may need to selectively mute a few people if it seems like there seems to be some background noise coming in. So here we are. Why don't I just ask whoever wants to jump in. Maybe I'll put Heather on the spot just because she mentioned that she got on the call that she's here. She's someone who attended my counseling intensive in Fort Lauderdale in December. And Heather, would you like to just jump in for a moment and say anything about what you've been experimenting with and in your learning process with motivational
interviews? Sure. Thank you so much. So as you may remember, I'm kind of a new dietitian and just jumped right into private practice. So I feel like my learning curve is very steep. that being said, I definitely pulled a lot from your conference. And one of the things that I've been focusing on is reflecting, because I feel like I definitely move on to the next thing really quickly, or I haven't that's kind of natural to me. So I reflect a lot, and I've started to ask questions. If I had to say, like, I have, you know, questions for you is, and this may be kind of a mixture between counseling and business, but I find that 45 minutes is a really, like, it ends up being a short amount of time for a follow-up, and I just feel like there's so much to cover. So I guess one question is does that mean, like, I might need to have sessions closer together, because sometimes people are coming in once every 3 or 4 weeks. You know, should I start scheduling them closer together, or I don't know, have a different game plan? It just seems like they have a lot of questions, and some of it I can table and answer later, but some of it is just a lot to go through, and I feel like we hit 45 minutes in no time. And yeah. I just want, you know, as always, I want to make sure they get everything that they are paying for. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I'd love to open it up to hear other people's thoughts, because, Heather, I am aware that you're relatively new in practice, and I remember you really have jumped right in a wonderful way. And my suspicion is there's some people on the call who have been in practice for quite a while and have sorted out for themselves that issue of how much to cover in a call and frequency of a session, and frequency of sessions and length and things like that. So I'd love to just open it up to see what other people have to say. Anybody? Do introduce yourself first.
Hi, this is Andy Schwartz.
Hi.
I have been practicing outpatient for a little over a year, so I can't say it's been years, but I totally agree. I totally agree that the 45 minutes seems to fly by, and I, too, would love suggestions on either how to be more efficient or potentially, to increase the frequency between sessions, because I feel like I end up being probably 45 to an hour for follow-ups.
Mm-hmm. And you're, I'm sorry, I sort of missed the question, was how to fit more,
be more efficient,
how to be more efficient.
Maybe how to be more efficient, because I too, and I'm still learning a lot about you, Molly, but I too am like behavior change based. So when you're really trying to change behavior, to do that in 45 minutes or less, while also trying to like recall food and other types of obviously nutrition related information, doesn't give you a lot of time to actually really implement the behavior modification techniques. So it
and to help the person develop a really smart goal, you mean? That
yes.
Yeah, help them really come away with something that's specific and manageable and all that. I've been tallying up these sort of questions. Does anybody have any ideas for either of them? I mean, I'll jump in with something, but does anybody have any thoughts? Okay, you're making me work. Well, let me say, Andy, you've been doing this for a little while, a little longer than Heather now. What so far have you figured out that does help you be more efficient?
Well, I've actually changed my approach. That's what's kind of making it hard for me, because I've actually changed my approach a little bit. I wasn't as heavy, maybe let's say the first 6 months in this outpatient position I'm in, I wasn't as heavy, or deep is probably a better word. I was not as deep into the behavior change. I always was, but not as deep as I have been the last maybe 3-4 months or so, and now I'm finding it being very difficult to staying within the 45-minute time. So
it's gotten even more difficult.
Even more difficult just because, like I said, I've really seen the benefit of going deep and seeing the behavior change as really the main reason why they're there.
Right.
But
if I had to
say one
exchange.
Thing,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, say it again, Molly?
No, go right ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, if there was one thing that I've been trying to do, so again, not saying this is, I don't know if it's working yet, but I've been trying to do is they'll kind of go off a little bit on, I don't know, something maybe just related to their life that's not directly related to kind of the SMART goal of either the food-related issue or, more importantly, the behavior-related issue. So I've been trying to remind them that, you know, we need to focus back on this particular behavior change, again, related to the food issue, instead of some other stories they want to tell me, which I feel sometimes rude about and sometimes a little guilty about, but at the same time, there's no way to stay within the time frame if they then kind of veer off and start talking about something else.
if you let them totally wander, and some people
Correct.
Will do that. They get a kick
yes,
out of it.
Yes, I've had people
listening
that,
to them, and they will go off on all sorts of things, particularly talkative people. And so you have been doing some guiding back.
Yes,
and
but I could use a lot more help.
yeah, Andy, I hear you, and that makes a whole lot of sense. And I'll reinforce you on that and remind you that the part of you that says, I feel bad, I'm being mean or something, you're doing your job. That's part of your job. Of course, respectfully. And yet it's part of your job to keep track of, let's see, where are we? Is there a focus of behavior here? If there isn't a focus on a behavior yet, then part of your job is to help guide them toward choosing a particular behavior.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a focus of behavior, and it sounds like you said that you seem to think, you know, sometimes there is, it can be our job to, you know, say things like, well, let's see, gosh, where were we? Oh, we were talking about you packing your lunch. Let's see. How will that look? Or, you know, getting to a more what I call key questions. You know, guiding them to get back to the focus, the behavioral focus. So that's one aspect, Andy. It is okay to guide. It's part of our job. You're wondering
good.
About being more efficient, and Heather, that's sort of your. Your question, too. I'm finding myself sort of noticing that I'm thinking, I'm not sure if being efficient is totally the most useful way to look at it. Yeah, you want to be efficient. But
or maybe concise is a better way, because I, too,
oh,
can
certainly,
get distracted
yeah.
easily. You know, so I
right. Well, certainly when you're giving information, the information part of what you do, having that as concise as possible. You know, if you do a carb counting spiel and it takes 15 minutes, can you break that down into smaller pieces that you offer to the client in little bits, because there may be parts of that spiel they don't need to hear?
Mm-hmm.
I just use carb counting as an example. You know, they may already know what carbs are. They may know exactly what they are. They may even know what portions are. It may be just one food that they don't know what the portion is. You know, so anytime you continually sort of ask the client for a little bit of feedback about exactly what they need from you, that can save time. What they need from you and how they need it, because you may have a wonderful carb counting spiel that begins with what happens when you eat something that has carb in it and insulin levels and blood sugar, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And then finally at the end, you know, gets to all the portions and timing. And the client may, their eyes may glaze over as soon as they hear the word, you know, insulin or blood sugar levels. And they don't want to hear the scientific stuff. You know? So the more we can find out from the client, what would be most useful here from me? I'd be glad to explain to you about how the body works in terms of blood sugar and what you eat. Would that be useful or not? And then I feel like I'm blathering on too much.
No, you're not. And, okay. I think that makes a lot of sense because, again, we're sometimes trying to, at least for me, I try to be very thorough so that they get it, but maybe they are getting it. I'm just using more words unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the ways to find out is to look at their eyes. Because we sort of all know what eyes glaze over looks like.
Right.
We sort of know what that looks like. And as soon as you see it, it can be tempting to sort of keep going, you know. But if instead you just sort of throw in the towel at that point and say, oh, gosh, you know, I'm sorry, it feels like I've sort of missed something or missed the boat or lost you here. How are we doing? Ask for feedback. And then the conciseness, it can be useful when you know there's a lot of information that might be useful, is to give them a bullet point list first and then ask them which of those bullet points they really want to hear a lot of detail about and which ones they'll either wait for next time or they don't think they need, that kind of thing. Because if somebody, you know, somebody comes in and says, well, how do you choose the right foods at the supermarket? That's a gigantic question. You could probably talk for an hour on that, right? But you can ask the client to help narrow that down for you and figure out what they're really asking. There's another part of this, though, and that's, I'll go back to you, Heather. That the client is only going to be able to take in a certain amount, and then their brain's going to get tired. And you're sort of wasting their time and yours if you keep at it. And that brings up your question about having the sessions a little more frequently. It seems you had a question about that. What have you been finding so far in terms of what the client seemed to want?
Yeah.
In terms of frequency.
So I have, honestly, I think they're far apart, like to me. I guess that's what they want, but they're more like 3 to 4 weeks apart. Some of them I think could probably, they're in so much of a flux and dynamic change that I feel like I want to keep in touch with them more frequently. Sometimes that can be helped by, you know, our EHR systems now have a text feature. So sometimes I'll check in with them by text or they'll text me. And so that kind of helps bridge it. I'm at 3 to 4 weeks ish, for most of my clients. Some of them I'd like to see sooner, but they're okay with it. So I kind of have been letting them lead and how often they want to. And I think at the end of the day, for the most part, my clients, I ask them, you know, are you happy with your progress? And they say yes. So I guess I'm okay with that.
good for you, Heather. You ask them for feedback on how it's going, on frequency. I totally agree with you that mostly deferring to the client about frequency makes sense. Because they know themselves, they know their schedule, they know their finances, they're paying for this. Is that right?
Yeah.
They're paying their own money? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
I'm
they
taking insurance
get to decide, now. You know, that. And they know how much, you know, mental space they have to jump in with this stuff. They may know that they need to go slowly. There are also people who know that if they come back in longer than 2 weeks, they will have forgotten what you were even talking about, and they'll sort of lose it. And you can trust them. And Heather, I have a little wording that I've found myself using at the end of the first visit. Might it be useful to hear that?
Yes, of course.
I don't know if it would fit for you, but why don't I toss it out anyway? I say, as we're sort of beginning to talk about scheduling, I'll say, what are your thoughts about when to schedule it, if it's been clear they're going to be coming back. And often they have they're really thinking, or they'll have a blank look or look at me, and so if there's a silence for long enough, I'll say, well, I suppose we want it to be long enough that you have a chance to play with this stuff and experiment, but not so long that you forget what we're doing. And I'll say it that way, and that seems to just hit right for most people, and then that helps them choose the right amount of time. I find a lot of people choose 2 weeks, unless it's an acute eating disorder, in which case it's weekly, at least at first, and there's really no negotiation about that. But you leave it up to them. And there's nothing wrong, Heather, also with saying out loud the I guess you might call it frustration on your part of sort of, oh gosh, we didn't get to cover nearly everything we wanted to today. You could go ahead and say that. You can say, oh gosh, we've got so many other things you were interested in getting to. We'll get to those some other time. And just, you know, say it out loud. So what's your reaction to those ideas?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've been trying to, I feel like I've been asking them when they want to come back, and I let them leave. So that's what I've been doing. But I do think that I could start asking them, you know, or making the comment, like, I know we didn't get to everything, but we'll get to it next time. So mm-hmm. I think there's this inherent idea that would be, you know, bad to not get to everything, but, you know, a lot mm-hmm. of people have questions, and obviously I have to, you know, say my part, so... mm-hmm. But I could add that.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, yeah. I often think of it as preemptive empathy. Before they've even said, you know, they're frustrated or whatever, I'll empathize with them. Oh, God, oh, that's a shame we didn't get to what you wanted to. It sort of helps things move along, I feel. Yeah, and the tip I wrote on sticking with time boundaries is it talks about that, about preemptive empathy and things like that. I'll quickly figure out which tip that was. I think it's time boundaries, tip number 21, so it's in the first book. And I also wrote one called When You Have Very Little Time, which is tip 43, which is in the second book. But anyway, well, this has been... interesting topic and probably useful to a bunch of people on the call. Heather and Andy, thank you very much, and thank you for allowing me to model as best I can my MI skills as I'm helping.
Thank you, Molly.
Sure. Oops, I just did something awful. I muted everybody by mistake. You're all muted. Hold on. I didn't mean to do this. So anybody who wants to be able to talk, I think if you do 4-star, oh, no, I didn't mute you. No, I didn't. I'm sorry. Never mind. I thought I did. Never used that feature. Okay. So who else is on the call who might have a cool thing to share or a resource to share or a question or...
Ms. Kellogg, I guess I could throw something out there.
Sure. And your name?
My name is Dustin.
Hi, Dustin.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi. What's up?
So, well, when I was listening to what Heather and Andy were sharing, I kind of have the opposite issue, wherein the doctor's office I'm at, the outpatient clinic I work in, my time span is always extremely limited. When I first started there, the doctor told me, you can have about 15 minutes with each patient. And I said, 15 minutes is long enough for me to maybe have some rapport building, but realistically, nothing else gets done.
Right.
So now, if I'm lucky, I've got about 30 minutes
mm-hmm.
to get through. And so it kind of makes me wonder what it would be like to have 45 minutes to have a conversation with somebody. I'm not even sure if I could go for that long
right.
at this point. But I've always found it to be very useful to, in the beginning, I spend the first few minutes where we kind of just shoot the breeze and just build rapport and
mm-hmm.
Talk about their interests. But then I'll always ask them, about specific goals that they have and what it is they hope to accomplish in meeting with me that day. And however chatty the person is, I always keep in mind what it was they told me, and I'll refer back to that. So they'll go on about a relationship issue or how upset they were that the Patriots won the Super Bowl or just a whole host of other potential issues. Yeah, whatever. But then I'll finally be like, okay, well, that's interesting. But let's go back and revisit again this idea you talked about how you're unhappy with how you get upset about choosing a food for breakfast and you're not really sure what you're supposed to do. And then they usually kind of go, oh, yeah, that's right, thinking, oh, that's what I'm supposed to be here for is something food-related. I found that to be pretty helpful.
Yeah, that does sound useful, Justin. It sounds like what you do is you find a hook at the beginning that you then can go back to and hang everything else onto, and a hook that comes from them, from what they say that they need.
Yeah,
and that helps keep you and both of you focused. And
you do see yourself inside.
Yeah.
It sometimes feels like a limitation, though, and I'm actually curious to hear that as well, is would it be better? I mean, am I not going to have as good of outcomes as, say, Heather or Andy do because they have longer to speak with their patients? Am I cutting them short and not doing them as much benefit?
Good question. I don't know. How long have you worked there?
About 2.5 years.
2 years, How does it feel in terms of results and outcomes? And
some weeks, fantastic. The follow-ups are beneficial. I'm able to see progress. And then other weeks, I wonder what it would be like with more time.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like you're dealing with the same kind of range as most of us. Most of us do.
Yeah.
I guess I might have a thought for you. It does sound like you've maybe done as much as you can in terms of getting as much time as you can. How do you handle the very end of the session? What are your last few things that you do at the end?
I try to follow the vibe of the patient. For them, I think they have the expectation that we don't have a long time with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if I feel like they're starting to wrap things up or if they start gathering their materials, I'll kind of follow in cue and do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then on other instances, sometimes I feel rude. Sometimes I feel like I'm being abrupt, and I kind of summarize what they have said, and then I'll usually say, now, do you have any other questions I can answer before we finish up today? And either they do or they'll say, oh, no, not really.
Yeah. That sounds very appropriate, Dustin. It sounds like, for one thing, you have set the expectations. People know that they're not going to have an hour or something. They know what they're going to have. And that's one of the most important things whenever you have limited time. Make sure both of you know what time you have, even if it's a little different from one time. I mean, I suppose there may be times when, because you don't happen to have anyone next, you can give them a full 30 minutes as opposed to 15 or whatever. And anytime you can say that, then they know what to expect. And indeed, if they signal it's time to end, you're using summaries and that's, of course, a classic MI thing to do, and it has so many functions. One of them is the one that you mentioned, which is to pull the threads together of what's been happening, signal to the person in the way you do your summary that you're going to be ending, because you could do a summary that would really open things up and encourage further, exploration or goals or planning or something. But if you're doing a summary that's clearly summing up, well, this is what we've done, this is how much we got to today, you liked my idea of this, whatever, and then you sort of glance at your watch or something and then say, how'd I do, or was there one last little thing you needed? And that sounds perfect to me.
Okay, good.
It's being real about time, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. And
this must be what validation feels like.
Oh, okay, good. Glad I had a chance.
I feel good to hear that, because that's just the thing I've always considered and wondered, am I being rude when I do it this way? Is there a better way to do this? So that I really appreciate you sharing that insight.
Sure.
It's
you being real. And saying, and maybe even it sounds like you do talk about time sometimes, saying
we
only have 5 minutes left, or and that's simply true. It's real. And there's some people who may not be very happy about that. Not your fault, however. You can empathize and leave it at that.
Okay.
Good. And thank you for bringing up the topic of summaries, because they're great.
Thank you.
Good. Dustin, did you have anything else you wanted to bring up?
No, I'm just eager to hear what everybody else has to say.
Okay, good. Who else is on the call? We've got like 30 people or something, I think. I haven't counted them all. Who else is here who wants to introduce yourself and bring in a resource or a fun story or a challenge?
Hey, Molly.
Yeah.
This is Becky Moffitt. And I'm
Hello,
calling,
Becky.
And I want to say hi to Heather. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Becky.
So, at any rate, I have a couple of comments and questions. One, before I get to my question, is just to comment. This topic has been wonderful for me, because I don't have time limits, but it's hard for me to rein people in and keep them to an hour. I have an hour with
mm-hmm.
them. And I've just recently started doing IBT for obesity, and the classes are just 30 minutes long, which is just, it flies by, you blink and it's over. So I have a lot of empathy for the gentleman that just spoke. But what I have been doing, and what I've found to be very helpful, is to use brief action planning, which is, abbreviated SMART goals, at the end of each of my individual sessions, and then we're doing it also in the IBT classes. And last time we didn't get past anything but talking about their goals and what they were going to do this next week and what they did the last week. And I thought, gee, I didn't have any time to do any kind of educating. I had a topic all planned, but they didn't know that, and they came away feeling very positive. So. And knowing that they just have 30 minutes is fine, and if they want to talk more, they can. But anyway, I found the brief action planning to be a good way to, like you say, to summarize and for them to pick something and to work on it and be very specific.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's great, Becky. And I love how you said that you noticed that you were planning to have, provide some information, education to them, and they didn't end up getting any, and they didn't notice the difference because they got something. They got the brief action planning. Right. That's great.
And I thought, well, that's good. So, so I'm learning, I'm still learning, but.
Yeah. Well, that's a great example of we went to grad school, we have all this wonderful information, and we think that that's what we're supposed to do. And we are when the client needs it, and we're there, but it's not, we don't have to, it can still be a useful session or group without us providing information.
Exactly, and cool. I think for weight loss is concerned, most people know what's healthy and what they need to work on, so anyway, that was a good insight that I had just this week, so wanted to share that.
Yeah, for those of you not familiar with brief action planning, you can actually Google it. There's a whole website and everything, and they have all sorts of useful ideas in there. And it's based on motivational interviewing, and yet it's sort of a shorter format. And my guess is that someone like Dustin is probably already using that because it's a sort of a shorter version. Mm-hmm. Okay. Who else is on the call?
Oh, Molly, before I go, this is still Becky. Uh-huh. I do have a question, and that is, just in this last month, I've had two referrals for eating disorder patients, and I'm in general practice, and I rarely do eating disorders, and so I would love some resources to help me, because I feel very inadequate with it. I'm mm-hmm. a CDE. I see oncology patients. I see cardiac rehab patients and a lot of weight loss, but eating disorders is something that I haven't done very much of. And anyway, I'm happy to help them and work with their counselors, but I would love some resources or something to guide me a little bit with this.
Sure, sure. Well, I would certainly suggest starting with having a reference that you can pick up, and that would be the Academy's Pocket Guide to Eating Disorders by Jessica Setman. If you were just going to get one book, that would be it. Okay. You know, it's one of those little pocket guide things, and it has all sorts of stuff in it. That would be a place to start. If you plan to continue to work at all with eating disorders or want to get into it a little bit more, I would suggest spending the $25 to join the International Federation of Eating Disorder Dietitians, IFED, I-F-E-D-D. It's a fairly informal group at this point. Wonderful listserv. Very good, helpful listserv that's fairly active. And it's just $25, and it's really simple sign up, and it's really worth it. Good people on that. Jessica Setnick started it. Jessica will also be, if you're looking for formal continuing education, she is restarting her 2-day or 1.5-day eating disorders boot camp. There are also several other people who do continuing education programs. Marcy Anderson is another one. She's based in Boston. She does a great 1 or 2 day, I think. She may have an online one as well. I apologize to Marcy if she hears about this, that I'm not really familiar. But it's Marcy with an I, M-A-R-C-I, Anderson. And so those are the things I think of. My guess is there are other people on this call, though, who might have additional. One other thing I'll suggest is that, particularly if it's, you know, a classic eating disorder that can be diagnosed, a clearly what I call acute eating disorders, it really behooves you to have either be working with a therapist who is very experienced with eating disorders, and or get some phone supervision from a dietitian who does supervision for eating disorders, okay? Because they are
tricky. That's excellent advice, yeah.
Yeah. There are a bunch of dietitians that do supervision, and if you got on the IFED list, you could just, you know, put out a post and you'd hear from a bunch of them. Jessica does, Marcy does. I mean, I could send you. You could email me, too. I have a list.
Thank you so much. That'll really help. Like I said, it's not very common. Well, I live in a rural area, and you know, people are sent home from the intensive or inpatient disorder treatment, and they need to follow up, and there are no counselors in this area that specialize in eating disorders. You know, and so they usually have to travel for their counseling, and anyway. But I'm happy to try to help them as a dietitian and work with other dietitians. And, you know, I just certainly don't want to steer them wrong. But you know, for the most part, I've been in practice for over 30 years, and most of the eating disorder patients don't continue. You know, they relapse and they don't keep coming back. So
yeah.
I need to learn more. So
yeah. Yeah, well, getting yourself a supervisor who you check with on the phone every now and then is a really good idea.
Thank you. Yeah.
Sure.
I will
anybody else on the call have any other ideas for her? That's a really good question. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have a little more time. Who else?
I'm curious if anybody provides a...
Who's this speaking?
I'm so sorry. This is Heather again.
Okay.
You know, I'm trying to do the summary at the end, mm-hmm. but, you know, there's a lot of things that we talk about. And mm-hmm. I'm curious if anybody provides, like, a summary, like a typed-up summary that they email or, mm-hmm. you know, send to the client afterwards as like a summary of the session, what we talked about and their goals and quote unquote homework and anything that I'm, you know, sometimes I'll send them a summary thing like this is what I'm going to do for you, you know, some follow-up mm-hmm. stuff. So I'm just curious if anybody does that in a printed form or emailed form after the session.
Great question. I'll just open that to the floor.
Hi, this is Andy Schwartz again.
Uh-huh.
Hi, my company that I work for, we have, like, in our EHR, like, a patient plan with, that's a goal-setting portion, but it also would, of course, include the diet plan, too, but then it has, like, a goal-setting portion that we could customize or just do, like, drop-down clicks on certain areas, mm-hmm. and then we do print that out and give them to them at the end.
Oh, okay, so they walk away with it.
Correct. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. They walk away with the handout. It has all the dietary interventions that we'd want to put on there, plus it has the behavioral goal-type information on there, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anybody else? I know there must be some people who do because I happened to get an email just a few days ago that I quickly realized was not for me. It came from a dietitian who actually has attended one of my workshops, and she obviously started to type in Molly, because that's my name, and sent it to me, and her client's name is Molly. But you know how Outlook or whatever populates a name, and then you choose the right one, and obviously she chose the wrong Molly. So... and I just read the beginning of it, you know, thank you for, it was nice meeting you today, this is what we covered, and I quickly didn't read the rest of it because of confidentiality issues, but it was clearly going to be a very thorough sort of summary of, from the dietitian's point of view back to the client, and it looked really useful to me. It seems like it might have taken a fair amount of time, but it sounds like, Andy, you guys have a... in your EMR have a way of doing it fairly efficiently.
Yeah, it's super efficient. I mean, you can customize it again, but it does have certain groups of the note that it pulls out for, like, mm-hmm. yeah, dietary, calories, whatever, protein, and then the goal section. So it is
right.
essentially kind of auto-formatted, but then you can also mm-hmm. customize it at the end. But it is very quick, yeah. and it's, I think, nice to have them to walk away because sometimes right. their head's spinning with all the info, and it's a good
right.
summary to bring home.
Yeah, yeah. And I can imagine that, I mean, I don't do that kind of thing, but I can imagine sitting there as you're sort of finishing up that, you know, and getting ready to print it out, sort of essentially reading it out to the person, which would be doing an out loud summary. So, okay, we talked about X and Y, and then these are the guidelines we came up with, and you'd be sort of saying it out loud as you were putting it together, and then you'd print it, which reinforces. The more times you feed back to the client what they've said, what their goals are, what they're, you know, the specific thing they're going to do this week or whatever, and then they walk away with it too. That's great. More effective. Okay. Who else? Anybody? We don't have to go the full hour if we don't have any other questions. These have been great questions this time. Really fun. Well, we could end a little early, but let me toss in something just for the fun of it, just because I'm thinking about it. And that is that I'll preface it first by saying it's concerning the writing reflex, the part of us that wants to tell people what to do. And when we go with our writing reflex, we often get resistance, unless we're very careful. I'll ask you, if you're game, to just for a moment, either with your eyes open or closed, sort of go to that moment in a session where you're thinking, ooh, I want to say this, I want to give this advice, you know, that kind of moment where you have some energy that you want to say something, contribute, tell the client something. Notice those kind of moments. And notice how it feels, you know, like in your particular body, you know, what is it? Is there a certain physical sensation, or is it more something verbal? Or where in your body do you notice it? And then realize that that's the writing reflex. It's the impulse to jump in and tell somebody what they ought to do. Doesn't mean you won't go with it. The more you can notice what it feels like in your body or your thoughts, so that you can take a deep breath. Notice I just took a deep breath. You can take a deep breath and go to yourself, okay, that's the writing reflex. Now, is this the time to bring it up, or do I need to first ask permission or to ask the client what they're actually needing right now? So that was just a little gift, if you will, to sort of help you notice what those moments are like so that you can catch them and decide more clearly how you're going to proceed from there. Anybody want to share what that was like? You don't have to. Nope. Okay. I know really clearly what my writing reflex looks like. It's usually when I'm leaning forward a little bit. That's my clue. So I then attempt to lean back a little bit and make a decision whether to proceed. So, anyway, well, this has been fun, and I hope I will see some of you who I haven't seen before at one of my workshops in the coming year or years. Conferences, I'm going to be at the IADEP Eating Disorder Conference in Las Vegas in a month or so, whenever that is. Actually, it's in March, I guess, isn't it? I'll probably be at the Renfrew Conference in November. I don't know yet whether I'll be at FENCI. I may have a conflict this year. I guess that's about it with conferences that you guys might go to. Okay. Any final thoughts?
Molly, what was that second conference? I've not been attending many conferences.
Oh, the Renfrew Conference. Yeah, I'm sorry. The Renfrew Foundation Conference, which is an eating disorder conference in Philadelphia every November. So if there's one eating disorder conference you go to, that's the one I suggest going to.
Well, and that's convenient because I live in South Jersey.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. And you could just go for the one day, or you go for several days. So they always hold it at the Marriott right at the airport, which is pretty
right.
Convenient.
Now that you mention it, I recall Renfrew is a organization or a treatment center, correct?
Yes, it is a treatment center.
Okay.
It is the
that's
first
right. Okay.
It's the first, the oldest freestanding eating disorder treatment center. It's over 35 years old. It's in the Philadelphia area and has centers all over the country. Yes.
No, I've heard a colleague talk about brain food. That's where it threw me off a little, because I'm like, wait, isn't that a center for treatment versus a conference? But that makes sense. That is
But they have an excellent conference. Very good conference. Definitely worth going
to. I'm so glad you told me that. Great. Okay.
Even if you just want to stick your toe in the water in terms of eating disorders or something, I mean, it would be a good experience. And roughly a fifth to a sixth of the people there are dieticians, maybe, something like that. Of course, a lot of therapists and a few doctors and psychiatrists and things like that, too. But anyway, okie dokie.
Thank you.
Maybe talk with a bunch of you in a few months when I do this again, and do stay in touch. Okay, take care.